Hello and welcome to episode 97 of the Blue Cup Tools podcast. I'm Francisco Gonzalez, also known as Grunislav, and with me as always and making amused faces at me.
Hello!
Ooh, hooray! Ooh. I'm in America still.
You are?
Hi.
Who are you?
Who?
Yeah, you didn't introduce yourself.
Oh, I'm Ben Chandler. I don't know who I am.
Okay.
I've been in a foreign culture for 5 weeks.
You're right.
That's upsetting.
It is. You're back in New York City.
You don't have the numbers on your 10-cent pieces. It's just called one dime. Is anyone supposed to know what that's worth?
You've been confused by the American monetary system.
I've been confused by a lot of things, including raspberry vinaigrette. Terrifying.
And Pop-Tarts.
They're not confusing, they're just upsetting.
And Slim Jims.
They're confusing because they're labeled as food and they're clearly not.
Clearly. Anyway, yeah, you're here. This
I
is
just
your
found a dust bunny.
Oh well, that's
I never noticed that before.
Oh, that's a big dust bunny.
That is, yeah.
I should get rid of it after we're done here. Anyway, yeah, so hi, you're back.
Hello.
You went upstate
after we
recorded the last live podcast.
I did.
Now you're back.
I am.
And you're here for a few more days.
I am. I'm just agreeing with you constantly. This is nice.
I like it.
Yeah.
What a change.
Oh.
Anyway. What hasn't changed is I'm still in my underwear recording the podcast.
I'm fully clothed because I had to go out.
What's wrong with you?
I had to go out and do laundry.
Well, not anymore.
That's true.
Anyway, no live stripping.
I put my clothing on to play your early build of your game.
Oh, okay. You did do that. Yes.
I want to be refined when I play it.
I should have gotten you the top hat.
You should have done.
It would have been fun. Anyway, right. So how have you been enjoying your American adventure for the past 4.5 weeks?
Yes, sir. I like it.
Okay, good.
It's good.
You like all the food?
I like everything. I like most things. I don't like all the food.
Okay.
I didn't enjoy the Baconator.
Okay. I didn't think you would.
No.
It was still fun to experience.
Like, I've had greasy food, but that's a whole new step above. But, you know. But yeah. No, I've enjoyed it. There's, like, both New York City and out of the city and into the nice woods and the waterfalls and streams and mountains and cliffs and small towns and little bluegrass bands and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, you saw a nice little, what's the word I'm looking for? Cross section.
I did, yeah.
Nice little cross section of American.
Yeah, and then I've had the city and the subway and the buildings and the hot dog carts and the museums and stuff.
So and the smells and the pollution and the rats.
It smells a lot better upstate.
Yeah, I know.
It smells
But there's a lot more pollen upstate.
There's so much pollen.
There is.
It's crazy.
Yeah, that always gets me when I go upstate. It's like being in a giant dandelion.
But I mean, I don't get hay fever. I don't mind or anything.
Yeah, it's all good.
But it was interesting because no one else was remarking on it. And when I came back, you're like, did you notice lots of pollen? And I said, yes, I agreed with you once more. yes, I enjoyed seeing so much pollen falling. It was.
Fallen pollen.
Yeah, it was. It's a very fecund place upstate.
It is. You're so magniloquent.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Anyway, I don't know about this polite podcasting shit.
Fuck off!
Yeah, okay. I'll go.
Fuck off!
I am in like...
I'm sorry, I didn't
mean
to hit you.
It wasn't very hard.
I know.
I am in like 2 days.
What?
I am...
Oh yeah, right. Well, 3 really, but
well,
yeah. It doesn't matter. Anyway,
This day is nearly over.
Yeah, but there's still tomorrow, Saturday. Well, yeah, I guess 2.5. Yeah. Anyway.
We have a letter from American.
We have lots of things on the podcast today.
We have
today.
2 things. Well, 3.
All right, let's get those out of the way.
Let's do the letter.
And then we'll go into our what have you been playing.
Our letter is from, not mine, because I've been upstate. Our letter is from, today is from Ponch, who is also American. Hello, Ponch. I'm in your country and your continent. But not your state.
Hello, Punch.
Hello. And he writes, Dear Cupcast, I'm perusing the final deals being offered in the waning days of the GOG summer sale, and I see that both Ultimate General, Gettysburg, and Shardlight are on sale. Judging entirely from the screenshots, these games seem pretty much identical in terms of tone and gameplay, though I could be wrong. I didn't look at the screenshots for very long, and I need glasses. Since my budget is limited, I can only afford one game. So, I turned to my old pals at the Cupcast. Which of these first-person erotic shooter games would you guys recommend I purchase? The sale ends in just a few days, so please reply promptly. Thanks in advance, and looking forward to your next episode, Ponch. He says promptly, that was a week ago.
Well, I responded to him. He sent that on June 18th. I responded on June 18th. Mm. He sent it at 23:20 on June 18th. Mm. And I replied at 13:17. I think your
my date's still set to Australia.
Right. Okay. Mm. So it would have been at 10 in the morning. And I replied at 1 in the afternoon.
Mm.
I said, Ultimate General seems to have a half star higher rating. I'd say go with that one.
See, you were very broad. Well, you know me. You know what I'm committed to.
The facts.
I'm committed to the facts. I want to look at the facts.
Yes.
Fact 1.
Uh-huh.
Ultimate General Colin Gettysburg is rated 4.4 stars.
Correct.
On GOG. Fact 2. Shardlight is rated 4.2 stars.
Correct.
On GOG.
All right, so 0.2 stars higher.
.2 stars higher is a real difference.
That is.
Fact 2.
Yes.
Ultimate General Gettysburg was over 70% off.
Oh, yes it was. You're right.
Shardlight was less than 30% off.
Yes.
The correct. Better deal here is clearly Ultimate General Gettysburg.
Gettysburg.
And then, when Shardlight comes back to full price, which now it has,
yes.
Buy it.
Right. That's right.
Yes.
That's a good plan.
Thank you for your
buy
letter.
Buy it at full price.
Thank you for your letter, Ponch.
Thank you, Ponch. Always appreciated.
We really appreciate it. And yes. Any advice like that we can answer, because all we have to do is look at the facts.
Correct. Also, speaking of the facts, and my computer is going to make a noise right now. There. I have, if you recall in the last episode, actually, let's get some other facts out first.
Let's do it.
We have a voicemail from Trolls.
Yes.
Who you warned not to send in any voicemails.
Yes. And then told the world that I did it so that he would send a voicemail, which he has now sent
a
5-minute voicemail because it's Trolls.
Yes.
And brevity
is not his strong suit. Although he mentions in the voicemail that he was going to do it otherwise because Trolls likes to give the facts as well.
I have a suggestion. We listen to the voicemail while you and I each eat a peach ring.
Good suggestion.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Hey, Blue Cuppers. I don't know what to call you. Square Waves of M. That's Squares. Joe Show. That's Blockers. I don't know what to call you guys, so I'm just going to go by Blue Cuppers, which sounds like a weird sexual euphemism, but who cares? You said that I should never send you a voicemail, and it turns out that in episode 95, it actually was an invitation to send you a voicemail, so I don't really know. Apparently, I'm not good at reading sarcasm. I was trying, as Francisco pointed out, to be polite and stay out of your way so you could do your show. But okay, I'll bite. I'll just... Because in 95, you guys were talking about something that I actually do have an opinion on. I usually just listen to your show because it's good advice for making games, and I like to pretend that I would someday be able to make a game that was worth playing. So I listen to your show. But now you were talking about swearing and offensive things in games, and I like to swear, and I've done some games where you might say it had offensive content beyond the swearing. I mean, there was Adventure Jam 2015, I did a game called What's in the Safe, where it, first of all, it swears a lot. It has colorful language, as Amir Akago called it when he was doing the voice for the main character. And it has grave robbing in it. And also time travel, which I guess is offensive if you're a serious science fiction fan. But the grave robbing thing, apparently, I mean, to me it was funny. To me it was, you're digging up some dude's progenitor just to look under his right butt cheek and find a glowing red rod that you stick into a time machine. I thought that was funny. I don't know about anyone else, but so stuff like that is not offensive to me. As a Danish person who, in Denmark, there's no censorship. We haven't had censorship laws for ever. Swearing is a common part in Danish. You know, you can put on a raunchy movie on national television in the middle of the day and no one will give a shit. So I had to learn the hard way that saying fuck and shit in public, if you're in an English speaking country, is actually somewhat offensive. And it still boggles my mind that people would find language offensive. Or certain words, and apparently which words are offensive keeps changing all the time, and it's very strange to keep up. It's actually quite fascinating, but I've never had, you know, a problem with words and how they can somehow be hurtful. So if I want to put colorful language, quote-unquote, into a game of mine, I will do it. Things that I genuinely find disturbing or offensive, well, disturbing anyway, there was... There was Gone Home, obviously, which had some really staunch depictions, or not depictions, but, you know, descriptions of homophobia in a family. Poor girl turns out to be a homosexual, and the parents just sort of dismiss it and tell her it's a phase and all that. I thought that was, you know, offensive, but in a good way, like in a, you know, this is not good behavior. That kind of hit home. Not that I'm, you know, in any way, a teenage lesbian girl, but, that still struck me. And there's a whole other side plot about the dad being sexually abused by his uncle, I think. That's also an offensive thing, but not in a sort of, I'm being offended. I'm more offended by the fact that it's a thing that's out there. It's the sort of thing that sticks with me. If you want to talk things that offend me, as in this should not be out there, let's talk about, you know, a scene like the rape scene in Phantasmagoria, which is not to say that you shouldn't put rape scenes in games if they contribute to the plot or anything, but putting a rape scene in a game like Phantasmagoria, which is so awful and lame, everything leading up to that rape scene is just lame and hammy and corny, and then you throw a rape scene in there and you just sit there and facepalm and go, that is actually pretty offensive. Not even the fact that you're putting in a rape scene, just the fact that you thought we would take this seriously is offensive. And it really, you know, I don't mean to belittle rape or anything, but there is no way to take that scene seriously in a game like Phantasmagoria. And putting it in there was just a lapse of judgment I can't even begin to wrap my head around. So anyway, those are the things that I find offensive. I originally recorded a much longer voicemail than this where I had more examples, and I think we're going to cap it off here so I don't take up all of your time. Let's see how long I went on for this time. It is, well, just under 5 minutes. I think you guys can deal with 5 minutes, right? So anyway, take care, and thanks for letting me be the first one to ruin your podcast. I hope more people follow suit, and please take care and stay cool.
Thanks, trolls.
You can call us tools.
Yeah, you can call us tools.
Yes, that's the first thing I'd say. The second thing I would say is, yes, Gone Home is good.
Yes.
And the third thing I will say is that, yes, Phantasmagoria is filled with bad judgment and bad decisions.
You've told me that you played a little bit of Phantasmagoria.
Like nothing, like a tiny little bit, because it's
Have
awful.
You seen the scene in question?
No, okay. I don't want, like...
I agree with him that it's a tricky subject to depict something like rape and do it in a meaningful... Well, really, the only meaningful result from featuring that in your game or any sort of media is to show how terrible it is, I suppose. Because I can't think of depicting rape as a positive in anything. But the scene in question, yeah, I mean, it's obvious that they were trying to be edgy and they were trying to be dramatic and they were trying to make it horrifying. But yeah, the way it's done is, and this is, it's not me saying you should have made your rape scene better, but it's so silly. It's literally just the guy grabs her and starts dry humping her in his boxers like a jackhammer, and then she cries on the ground. And it just, instead of evoking the reaction I'm sure they were trying to go for, which was, oh my god, she's just been raped. How horrible. It's more like, oh my god, her husband just shook her violently and came in like 30 seconds, because seriously, it only lasts like 30 seconds.
I think,
and it's like, what did I just watch?
I think the point is also, like, if you're going to do something, have a reason for showing it other than being edgy.
Yeah.
Because edginess is very little value in a game.
Yes.
It really adds nothing.
Yeah.
And, you know, no matter the act of how it's shown in the game, you have to write it in a way that's convincing. Like, you know, a character's response or, you know, the setup to it changes a lot. So, you know.
Yeah.
It's such a big subject because it's a hard thing.
Yeah,
and that would, and that scene alone would probably still upset certain people.
Yeah.
You know.
Definitely.
So the main thing is, it's such a hard subject to do in a way that's not going to upset people or hurt people, that can't you find something better? Mm. Or, you know, anyway, I don't know. I'm not saying don't do it. I'm just saying, boy, that's a hard thing to get tasteful.
Yeah. I would say err on the side of caution and don't do it unless you really, really feel that it needs to be there.
You should be really, really confident that you're doing it in a tasteful manner before you throw something like that in.
Yeah.
And even so, if you upset people with something like that, don't be super surprised.
Exactly. Exactly. Anyway, let's move on.
What have you been playing this week?
Oh, not yet. Not yet. I wanted to clarify one last thing, some more housekeeping.
Oh.
I'm sorry that you're upset by this.
I'm not upset.
You sighed as though you were.
No, I was just like, I'd built myself up to hear what you've been playing.
You already know. I told you what I've been playing.
I forget.
Oh, okay.
I want to hear again.
Well, remember last podcast, I was talking about Mario is Missing and the different music and how Sydney had, Australia had a very strange sounding music, and then we listened to it and it didn't sound strange at all.
Yes.
Well, I realized why that was.
Yes.
We were listening to the Super Nintendo soundtrack. And we also listened to a little bit of the NES New York soundtrack. I played Mario is Missing on the PC.
Right.
And it has a very different, well, it doesn't have a very different soundtrack, but it has a more varied soundtrack.
Right.
If you recall, you also asked if there was a sad balalaika in the Russian one.
I did.
And we listened to the Egypt/Moscow one, and you were like, well, that doesn't sound very different. Allow me, if you will, to play you a couple of tracks from the PC version of Mario is Missing.
I'm listening.
Let's go with Moscow first.
That's a good starting point.
I agree.
Oops.
So as you can see, it's quite a bit more appropriate sounding on the PC.
Mm.
Now, let's listen to Sydney, which I still don't understand.
Our first Windows computer.
Yeah.
It was a Celeron, I think, 333 megahertz. And, you know, we had all the good stuff.
Sure.
15-inch monitor. Uh-huh. You know.
Why'd you waggle your eyebrows at that?
15-inch. Come on. You know, 3-button mouse.
Right.
And keyboard. And we had a printer.
Uh-huh.
And when you went to print, before it would print, it would make all of those sounds first before it started. Do you remember printers?
Mine still does.
Right? But this was... Mine still does too, but this was... It was more back then, and that's the sounds it used to make.
That's true.
When I was listening to that music just then, I thought, I'm like, I know what this is. It's my printer getting ready.
It's your printer from Sydney, Australia getting ready.
See, that's why it's relevant, because it's the sound of me having a heavy bout of flatulence and then trying to print something.
Right. Mm. Absolutely. Anyway, I'm glad we clarified that, because I've been waiting 3 weeks to do so.
I'm glad.
Right.
I'm glad we could make a small man's dream come true today.
Hey.
I can't say small boy, you're 30-something.
I'm not a small man. You're just a giant man.
That's true.
Anyway.
That's true.
Right, so what have you been playing?
I mostly have...
Well, what are you playing right now?
I'm playing Gardenscapes.
Literally this instant
I'm playing
on your
Gardenscapes.
Uh-huh.
That's great.
Okay. I've noticed that you can zoom into the backgrounds. Doesn't that make it a little bit easier? Doesn't that remove the challenge of the hidden object game?
No.
Okay.
If you say so.
You know who played Gardenscapes a lot?
Your mother.
My mother.
You know why? Because she's smart. And she has excellent taste.
I won't deny this, but I think that really says all I need to say.
You asked me what I'm playing, and then is this just, have you just asked me what I'm playing because you wanted to belittle me?
Yeah.
Okay.
I always want to belittle you when it comes to hidden object games.
But while I've been here in America, I haven't been playing a lot. I played Runestone Keeper,
mm-hmm.
which is presented like, Minesweeper. You just click on tiles, but it's a roguelike dungeon crawler.
Okay.
You know? And I played that. That's mostly what I played when I was upstate.
Mm-hmm.
And, I actually finished it, but it's a roguelike. So you can play like, you know, but I enjoyed unlocking characters, unlocking skills, unlocking upgrades, and then playing the game and eventually beating it. And so that was really good.
Mm-hmm.
While I was upstate, I played a little bit of Jonathan Blow's The Witness.
Ah, yes.
Which is quite fun.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the puzzles that I solved and enjoyed solving are some of the best puzzles I ever played.
Hmm.
But I do wonder if the formula changes much. Because as far as I've been playing so far, there are only very few subversions of the initial formula.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder how much it changes. But I enjoyed what I played. I didn't play a whole lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I enjoyed what I did.
Mm-hmm.
I've also been playing a little bit of Night of the Rabbit.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I saw you playing it last night.
Yeah, because I bought 62 games from the GOG Summer Sale.
You did buy 62 games.
So
you gave me a long list of the games that you had purchased.
You asked.
I did, because I was curious.
And therefore they are received.
Yeah.
But, so I've been playing a little bit of that. Just a little bit. Because we've had adventures to do.
Sure.
You know, and I had adventures to do upstate. And,
sure.
Yeah, so I've been playing a little bit of that.
Okay.
That may be it.
You realize that in future episodes, if you actually manage to play all these games that you've purchased within a reasonable amount of time, you're going to have a lot to say.
I always have a lot to say.
Well, not this time or last time.
Well, but usually it's the longest section of our podcast.
That's true, it is.
What have you been playing, Francisco?
I've been playing a lot of games.
Gosh.
Gosh.
Fill me in.
Golly. Well, as I mentioned in the last podcast, I had been playing Uncharted 4.
Correct.
After you left, I finished Uncharted 4.
Right.
And then I went back and played through Uncharted 4 once again on crushing difficulty.
Right.
And I finished it. And then I found myself needing a game to play on the console because sometimes I go without playing console games for a while, but then other times I feel this need to. So I decided to pick up Fallout 4 again.
Mm.
And I've been playing Fallout 4 and I've been enjoying it actually because the first time around I started playing it and I got not too far into it, but I got at least a few hours in.
You told me that you got bored.
I did get bored.
Mm.
I got bored because it was very much like, okay, go to this place, shoot some super mutants, kill some ghouls, go over here, whatever. But then I was playing it this time and I was kind of doing some side quests, but then I thought, let me go back to the major quest line, and I got to Diamond City, which is pretty much the first goal that they give you. Excuse me. I don't know how much you know of the story of Fallout 4.
Very little.
Would you mind if I give you a very brief spoiler-free synopsis?
Give me a brief synopsis.
Okay. So remember in Fallout 3 how the main story was you were this child who grew up in the vault and then your dad goes running off and you have to
find
your
father.
Right. Well, this is the opposite. In this one, you are a father who gets put in a vault at the day that the bombs go off and you're cryogenically frozen and you wake up 200 years later when the world is Fallout.
So it's Futurama, but for a married man.
Correct. And your goal is to find your son.
Hmm.
So basically you come out of the vault and you're like, I need to find my son. And then
I've abandoned my boy.
Exactly. And then you go and one of the early quests, they say, go to Diamond City. You'll be able to find it. Him there, so, or you'll be able to find someone to help you there.
Good.
So I went to Diamond City, which, as you know, Fallout 4 is set in Boston.
I do know that.
And Diamond City is just Fenway Park. Right. That has been converted into a giant tent city.
Right.
Which, it's kind of like Megaton, basically.
Right.
So I got there and, you know, I met interesting characters and I saw interesting things and I thought, oh, okay, this is cool. So, cause really the thing I had been focusing on most was helping the Minutemen, which is the first faction you meet within like the first 10 minutes of the game.
Within the first minute.
Yes. And the Minutemen quests kind of introduce you to the idea of the crafting and the building up settlements and things like that.
Boring.
Yeah, I was bored with and I was a bit overwhelmed with, although now I've gotten to appreciate it a little bit more. So once I finished with that and I started going more to the main thing, the main story and doing some other side quests, I discovered more places and I found some pizza and I decided that...
Pizza!
Fluffy Ruffs.
Bonbons.
Yes. Anyway, so yeah, I've discovered a whole bunch of companions and I've opened up a whole bunch of places and I'm really enjoying it and I'll get back to it once you leave and probably waste my time again. But yeah, Fallout 4 has redeemed itself in my eyes. There was a line of side quests, which I've told you about that I thought was really fun, which was the Silver Shroud, where a character asks you to get this costume from a TV studio and then he's like, I'm going to put it on. But then he says, no, you put it on. And then you put it on and he gives you missions to go and fight evildoers. And then you can talk in the Silver Shroud voice. And it's pretty, it's endearing.
Right.
Is what it is.
Right.
So I
want to say that even from the very first Fallout game, the interesting stuff mainly happens when you go to the settlements.
Yes.
You go to the cities. So
definitely.
Even from the very first one. So the fact that you were just going around and learning about crafting, no wonder you were bored.
Yeah. Because I wasn't really, I mean, I was helping settlements and stuff, but it wasn't as interesting as the bigger settlements.
Right.
Because these only have like one or two, generic people. Right. So anyway. Yeah. What else have I played? I played a little bit of The Preposterous Awesomeness of Everything, which, what was that sigh for?
No, I was just, I was exhaling.
Okay.
I wasn't sighing.
Okay. Yeah, so I played a little bit of that, which you got for me very kindly, and, I didn't play a whole lot. Like, I got to about three different endings, which I did not win. The game is very specific to tell you that you do not win, even though you get an ending. I only got as far as like the trying to get a guy elected so that he could tell people how to build a rocket.
Yeah, so you're following the main quest thread.
Yes, I woke up and I was no longer naked. I had a Hawaiian shirt on.
It's disappointing, isn't it?
It is disappointing. Mm. But hey, I make up for that in life.
You do.
Anyway, I enjoyed what I played of it, and I need to go back and play it.
It's
more.
I got it for a couple of different people because it's silly in a way that I find endearing.
It is.
And that's what I was like, you know, this is...
And it's clear that it was made by one person as a labor of love and a satire of adventure games.
But also it's a satire of society.
Yeah.
And it's got quite a sweet ending.
Okay.
When you actually get the ending.
Right. Okay.
So.
Well, that's something to look forward to.
Yes, it is.
I saw that Adventure Gamers reviewed it and only gave it 2 stars, which I kind of get the feel. I didn't read the review. I just sort of read the good, the bad, and the verdict thing.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of wonder if maybe they missed the point of the game, but I don't know.
I don't know. It's pretty short.
Yeah.
And it's meant to be more a...
eel.
Oh, what?
You said more and I said eel.
Oh, more of a conversation piece, I guess.
Yeah.
About games and about life than this is, I want to be a pirate. Let's go on a big adventure.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But yeah, you can tell from the very, like, even if you play the tutorial, which is a self-contained and not in the game demo, sorry.
Oh, I didn't.
That's quite funny because, like, they're painting the sets for the game.
Oh, nice.
And you're a duck.
Oh.
Ling.
Okay. That's amusing.
Yes.
Well, I like it when games provide demos that don't have anything to do with the actual game.
But, as do I.
But I think that works more for comedy games. Because the only ones that I can think of that have done that are, well, Freddy Farkas and, this one now.
Right.
Anyway. I also played, I used to do this thing in my youth where I would play Gabriel Knight, but I would play it each day. I would play one day a day, and I would do it between the days that Gabriel Knight takes place, which is from the 18th to the 28th of June. Yes. But I realized that you were going to be here from the 18th to the 26th of June.
That's correct.
Here and I so, am. Yes, here you are. Today is the 23rd of June. Correct. Actually, today is St. John's Eve. So don't go to any voodoo ceremonies in or swamps tonight.
Isn't that where we're going tonight?
No, we're going to
going to eat ice cream.
Yeah.
That is very similar in my experience.
You're right. You get to wear a crocodile mask if you wish.
I always wish.
Yes.
Believe me.
I know. Anyway, so I, realizing this, I decided, well, let me just shift it back 10 days. And so I played it from June 8th until
the tradition June, has been broken, but.
Well, slightly. From June 8th until June 17th, because what? It actually skips a day, and I wasn't going to skip a day, so I, at the end. So I played through Gabriel Knight 1 again, and I enjoyed it again. I hadn't played it in a few years. Oh, I also want to point out that I played the original version on my laptop, not the recent remake.
I got the remake for free on the GOG Summer Sale.
You paid too much for it.
My gosh, Francisco, what are you insinuating?
I'll let the audience decide that.
Goodness.
Yeah. Aside from that, I think that's everything that I played.
I understand.
Yeah. That's it.
Okay.
We've
been doing stuff.
Yes.
And well, you've been working.
And this was all in the interim between the 3-week interview. Right, but so I was mostly playing Fallout 4 at the time, so. Right. Yeah. Anyway.
Very good.
That's one of those games that it takes up a lot of your time.
It is a Fallout game and it is a Bethesda game. That's a high combination for time sink.
Correct. Correct.
So.
And I also managed to get work done in between in that time, so.
Yes.
Anyway.
So we have a topic request.
We do have a topic request.
Which is something we've sort of talked about before, but a long time ago.
Yeah, okay.
As is everything else we've done of note.
Yes. So, yes, our topic this week comes from Anas Abdin.
Hello, Anas.
On the forums, who has made an astronaut.
He has. And is making tardigrades.
Tardigrades, yes. And he says, topic suggestion, smiling blue cup. I'm constantly trying to improve backgrounds, animations, etc. This is done whether by changing colors, lighting, camera position, or even by replacing the whole background. You know, when you look at your old games, you always feel you could have done things better. Well, since many of us work alone on their projects, the time span gets long enough to look at old parts of our projects and feel we must do improvements. Do you think there is a limit to this? Is it OCD-ish? Thanks, guys. Well, thank you.
You're very welcome.
Abdin. Yes.
Sir.
You are very welcome for suggesting, thank you suggesting the topic, and you're welcome for the sage advice we will now offer you.
The impending insight.
Correct.
As I like to call it.
Yes.
Being a person that's weird.
Yes. Now, we have talked about this before, and I will give a short answer for now and say that I think it's inevitable that your art will improve from when you start a game to by the time you finish it. Because if you are one person, depending on the scope of your game, I've found personally it usually takes me between a year and a half to 2 years to get a game fully to the point where it just needs polish. Which mostly at that time means that all the assets are done. At least the backgrounds are done. Sometimes not all the animations. But yeah, so if you start a game and, you know, a year and a half down the line, you've gotten a lot of practice at drawing backgrounds just from doing, and your style has changed so significantly that there's a huge contrast between the first background you did and the current stuff you're doing, then it might be a good idea to go back and change stuff. But I think the general rule of thumb is try and aim for consistency from the beginning so that that doesn't happen to you.
Yes.
Good.
I think.
Good night, everybody.
I think, Josh Nuremberg, I think I've said his name right.
Josh Nuremberger.
Burger. Right, I forget. But I always thought of him as the J Burger, or Josh.
Right.
Said an interesting thing when he was planning to do Gemini Rue is that he established an art style which he felt comfortable looked good enough and he could do 80 backgrounds in without it being too much work.
Mm-hmm.
He then did the 80 backgrounds and set a game in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's a very practical approach, but I don't think we can all take that approach. He was a good artist at the time. He could, in his capacity as an artist, make that happen.
Right.
I agree that over the course of creating a game, especially for me, at the moment, I'm working in a new resolution, so I'm still learning what I'm doing. And you're always still learning within a new setting and things like that. But when I was doing Shardlight, for example, I was very confident that this is going to look good. Now that I'm working at a higher resolution, I'm not confident anymore. So I'm trying to figure out what's going to look good. Mm. And I've gone back and redone more in this game than I've ever redone in a game before because I'm still finding my feet. And when I was first starting, I was starting doing graphics. I was still finding my feet. So I had to redo things. I think the important thing to do is two things. One of them is to ask people or to play your game and to watch them as they play. As you've recently experienced, when someone plays your game, if something really catches them, they will react. Even if they don't say much, mm-hmm. they'll react and you'll go, oh, that's something, you know, and see what people notice stands out. Because that's the thing we need to remember is some stuff will stand out to people, other stuff won't mm-hmm. so much. And you can get away with things you don't think you'd be able to get away with sometimes. And other times, things you thought you'd get away with, you really do not. The second thing is to say to yourself, what am I gaining from redoing this?
Yeah.
What is the game gaining? And is it worth the time I'm putting into it where I go, oh, this background doesn't look slightly right. This animation doesn't look slightly right because he did ask about art.
Yeah.
Or should you be fixing the puzzle that sucks that you've been putting off for 2 months?
Right.
You know, think about what you're gaining as a whole because a game is more than the sum of its parts. And it's easy to think, oh, that background or that animation looks a bit, you know, I could redo that. Why?
Yeah.
You know, I recently redid the female character's outfit in Unavowed. The female player character, sorry. There's not one female character.
Right.
We're not
this is
Ubisoft. And, excuse me, bit of a sticky throat there.
Uh-huh.
And it was interesting because I had sort of suspected once we put her in the game and I was reading the roles she was playing, I sort of thought she doesn't look quite right, but I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
Then one day Dave said, hey, look, you know, I'm really sorry, but I've had some reports that people don't think she quite looks right. And I said to him, look, I've suspected this all along, but I thought it was me, just me being the guy that's like, oh, nothing I do looks good. So as soon as he said it, I'm like, I agree. Let's redo it. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what it takes for me usually is to have people go, hey, I don't quite feel this is right. It doesn't match everything else. And that's a real clear indication to me as well. If you think something's spot on and other people say like, you know, oh, this doesn't look quite right. You're like, well, what's wrong with it? You know, whereas if people say, hey, this doesn't look quite right. And you're like, you know what? I've been thinking that for ages, but finally it took someone else saying it to get Dave and I to go, let's redo it. Mm-hmm. You know, and it was 2 days work to redo all the animations because it was mostly just recoloring.
Right.
And now everyone's much happier with it and it fixes the game to an extent, you know, so. There's a couple of things to keep in mind. Like you say, it's inevitable, hopefully, that you'll get better.
Yeah.
But I also think the first background you do for the game, you're the most excited and you put the most effort into.
Right.
And then as you go, you're, you know, 67 backgrounds down the track, you're running out of patience, you're thinking about your next project.
Mm-hmm.
All the stuff that happens naturally over the course of a game, you just want to get it done. So there's different stuff. You've got more skill but less patience towards the end of a project.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know. I also think there's some stuff, and I do this, that I put it down as a, if I get time, I'll finish this and redo it. I never get time, but, you know, there's always those things where I think to myself, yeah, I would like to fix this, but I've got all this important stuff to do first. Let me get that stuff done. See what time I've got left to work with. If I got time, I redo it. If not, that's a shame, but it still works within the game.
Yeah, the personal experiences I've had on games and redoing stuff is, it's kind of similar. Like when I was doing A Golden Wake, I remember that I was kind of, I mean, I still wasn't super confident in my abilities at the time. I mean, I thought I was doing better than the stuff I had done on my previous freeware games, but I still was learning a lot.
Hmm.
And I mean, I still didn't have a complete understanding of perspective, which I still don't have a 100% grasp on it,
but
I'd like to think that I've gotten a lot better
since then.
Well,
you now.
I wasn't fishing for compliments, by the way.
No.
Zing!
I'm just.
Oh, fish.
I'm agreeing with you this podcast, remember?
That's right.
That's this
right.
one.
Just this one.
That's this
I
one.
I just get a free pass this time.
Well, we're nearly at 100. That's It'd true. Be a shame to end all this and like, you know.
What do you mean end all this?
You're the one that wanted to end it at 100. I've got nothing left
to
say.
I've got better plans for 100.
Oh, dear. Oh, yes.
You know my plans for 100.
I just, you know.
It's been, we haven't talked about it in a while.
Sometimes I have a bit of reptilian memory and I forget stuff.
Anyway, when I was doing a Golden Wake, I learned some techniques.
Some shit.
Yeah. Like, you taught me about the splodge, which was something that I relied on quite a bit for the lighting splodge, which was basically to, for outdoor scenes, I used it a lot, which was basically get an overlay layer and do a bright orange splodge. And that balanced out the sunlight and color balance of the sunlight or something.
What I was trying to do is you had very literal interpretations of colors.
Yes.
Your grass was pure green.
Yes.
Your roofs were pure red. Your sky was pure blue. Mm-hmm. So I was trying to warm everything up and push it towards a color scheme.
Right.
Rather than just trees are green and brown.
Right. So it was very much a band-aid solution, but
it was.
I learned how to do that and then I thought, oh, I need to go back and put this in all my backgrounds. And so I did. Another thing I did too before I decided to switch up the character portrait style was I learned about the, when they were still like a little more pixely and they animated, I learned about, a very rudimentary understanding about the color regions of faces and stuff. So I went back and I added all those to the portraits, which in the end got redone completely anyway.
Mm.
Because I learned another thing, which was do them at higher resolution and scale them down.
Yes.
So that was a redo. I don't remember how many of the original ones I had done before I went back and redid them all.
It was a number
but
of them.
It was enough of them to be a significant amount. And even still, like, you know, they still weren't great, but they looked better than they would have if I had left it as is. But anyway, the other thing was the walk cycle of the main character, which also, yeah, I had done it a really long time. It, really early in production.
And you had about 4 testers comment on it?
I had about 4 testers comment on how the sidewalk cycle looked off somehow. And how it was very, like, he looked jelly-like or something like that. I remember that as one of the comments. And I thought, nah, it's just how he's supposed to walk. You know, he's got a little spring in his step and whatever. And then I went back and I looked at how I had done it. And I realized that, I had rotoscoped the walk cycle. And I realized that what I had done was I hadn't really resized my original film correctly.
Right.
So it wasn't to the same proportions as the standing sprite. It was a little bit bigger. And all I had done was just copy-paste the head on to the position I thought. So basically what was happening was his head was too small and his body was slightly too big. And it just didn't look right. So I went back and I was like, all right, this is going to be work, but I'll do it. And so I went back and redid the walk cycle and it was fine. And then all the testers were like, oh yeah, the walk cycle looks like 10 times better. So it was, part of it was that I was being stubborn and saying, no, this has been in the game the whole time. It shouldn't need to be redone because it's been in there so this long and there's no one has said anything yet. So, you know, that's an easy attitude and trap to fall into. So yeah, there's that.
I think if 4 people are saying or 3 people are saying one thing and it's the same thing they're picking on, that's definitely an indication. And that's of a group of maybe 50.
Yeah.
If you think of that in bigger terms, in 500 people, which is not that many in terms of playing a game, that's 40 people.
Right.
That's a lot.
It is.
You know,
yeah.
So
those are the ones that are going to leave all 40 steam negative.
They're
steam
the people
reviews.
That talk. The squeaky wheel gets the kick. You know,
that's the grease.
No,
that's what you get when you eat the Baconator.
Yeah, I was referencing Baldur's Gate.
Gotcha.
I always am.
What a surprise!
But yeah, it's also important. It's really easy to get defensive and go, you know.
Yeah,
well, what's wrong with it? You know,
because it's your baby, and when people start poking holes in it, that's when you lash out.
Yeah, but I think the other important thing is to say, well, how much work is that really?
Yes. I just got an image of someone poking holes in a literal baby and someone going, stop poking holes in my baby.
You have a terrifying imagination.
I make adventure games.
That's true. But yeah, it's easy to go, oh, you know, well, that's unnecessary and stuff like that. But yeah. We'll do anything unnecessary.
Sure.
We'll put way more work than that into something that doesn't matter at all.
Mm-hmm.
So why wouldn't you redo the thing? And I used to be very much against redoing things mm-hmm. when I was still learning a lot. And, you know, I'd do a game a month. So my attitude was always, well, I'll just do it better next month.
Yeah.
But it's different now.
Let me ask you, it's been a while since you designed a game on your own. You're currently thinking about doing one and you've got stuff for it. You have been working, excuse me, you've been working at this point just like doing backgrounds and you usually get a sketch of what the background should look like and you go ahead and you draw your background. When you made your own games, they were pretty small. You would just kind of draw the backgrounds and put them in as you went, right?
Yes.
You didn't do sketches. You didn't do placeholder sketches.
I did sometimes.
Okay.
Yeah.
What about, are you going to consider doing that for your game now, or do you think you're just going to do the background straight up?
I don't know. For this one, I've been writing everything down.
Right.
Which is unusual for me, because, you know, I'm trying to pitch it.
Right.
Yeah, well, I have pitched it. Mm-hmm. A rough version of it. So that's the first thing, is I've got to convince somebody that this is worth making.
Mm-hmm.
So that's step one. Step two is that, being a bigger project, I'm going to forget stuff.
Yeah.
You know, when I get back home, I've got puzzles written out in paper that explain exactly how to do them, because they're the sort of puzzles I write. You need to, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but I've done like two backgrounds just to show the game off and be like, hey, let me make this and, you know, give me money. And like, well, I mean, that's the idea, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
You know, and it's interesting because I'm not going to do backgrounds now because I don't know how much is going to change. And like, it's very, very early.
Yes.
Like the game, it's very, very early along, but already things are changing, you know?
Yeah.
And I know that later on things are going to change. So why would I do stuff now only to have them change later?
Right. But I mean, as far as when you're building the game.
Well, I'm not sure.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
Well, the reason I ask is because I obviously do placeholder sketches.
Yes.
And then I come back because I like to build the game. And even in just doing the placeholder sketches, like sometimes I'll be in the middle of one and I'll think, no, you know what? This isn't working. Let me just scrap it and start again and change the camera angle. Or, you know, instead of doing it in 1-point perspective, I'll do it in 2-point perspective or vice versa.
Well, I mean, in terms of someone that does backgrounds all the time,
yeah.
When I'm sketching a scene out to start it, when I'm roughing it out
right.
and doing a thumbnail sketch, which is what I usually start with, there may be 3 or 4 attempts at that before
right.
I get one that I go, there's my layout.
Right.
So that's normal, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I figured.
Yeah.
And I mean, just, yeah, and in any case, as far as that, I don't know if this is still relevant to the topic, but I think it's better to do it that way and build your game with just a skeleton and stuff because, you know, like you said, you never know what's going to change. I mean, just now you were playing my game and you said, you know, you could cut a few of these locations, which means I'm cutting those backgrounds.
Yeah.
Which, if I had actually drawn them, would be
horrible.
Yeah.
You'd have wasted a week.
I would have wasted, exactly.
Yeah.
So now it's just like, okay, well, whatever. Doesn't matter.
I mean, that's why we prototype. That's
exactly.
why we test everything like that. Yeah, it does help a lot if you can get hands on
mm-hmm.
and see people playing it. Because also I think once you've done something and you've done it well mm-hmm. and you've put 3 days into it, when someone goes, oh, this isn't quite right, you could cut this whole room. You're like, well, I don't want to. Even though that would sharpen your game up and make it a better game,
mm-hmm.
you're like, but I put all that work into that nice background.
Exactly.
So now I don't want to cut it.
Exactly. And then, right.
As someone that paints, who God knows how many backgrounds a year, cut the background. It's not that important.
Yeah.
You'll paint a million more.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And probably better because you...
You hope so.
Yeah.
Here's the thing that's interesting is my power used to get all the time.
Mm.
And I always used to get frustrated if I lost work because there was a couple of times I lost a lot of stuff.
Mm.
The second time I redid that scene, it was so much better because I'd had my warm up. I'd had my rehearsal.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, in real art jobs where you're not the guy doing all the work and you've got your set little thing, you know, you do four versions of it and pick one because you've got all the time in the world. You and I don't have all the time in the world. We got to work pretty quick.
Right.
So it's interesting that that is the best way to do it, is to fail once, fail twice, fail three times, and then do it properly, you know. And you'll see guys that do really great backgrounds and go, yeah, this is just my sketch. Mm. And you're like, well, how the hell is that the sketch? Because they were just working stuff out, you know. So,
well, it's like we went to the Met the other day.
We did go to the Met the other day.
And we saw these amazing paintings that were just sketches.
Yeah, they were interesting because they were ceiling paintings.
Right.
And frescoes.
Yeah.
And those guys had to show the person that's commissioning them, you know, and also, you know, anyone that's helping them and themselves for reference 2 years down the line, this is what you're painting, you know. So, yeah, it's very helpful to fail a couple of times in a mindset where you're like, okay, I'm allowed to fail.
Mm.
And then you do it in a mindset of, okay, now I'm doing it properly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good.
Yeah.
I mean, and I'm trying to think of how this applies to a design thing as well.
Well, that is to do iterative design, which Dave does a lot, and he's especially doing it for this game, is to design the thing, have some crap sketches that you do in 2 minutes, put them in the game, and play through it, and go, oh, no, why am I doing this? Right. This seemed interesting on paper, but now I'm playing it. This is boring.
Yeah.
I'm clicking through this dialogue going, let me get to the good bit.
Right.
So, yeah. It is very much an iterative process making a game, I believe.
Hmm.
And allowing yourself the ability to work loosely so that you can go back and change it. But in terms of what Anas is asking, I think it is beneficial to redo things as long as you realize that that is probably not secondary in importance, but it's also, you can get lost down that wormhole.
Yeah.
And it's very important to set yourself realistic goals.
Yeah.
Of how much you can realistically do.
Yeah, because the main thing you don't want to do is get so freaked out about the fact that you redo something and then, oh my God, it looks so much better. I need to do this to everything. Then that increases your production time significantly, depending on the size of your project as well. But
yeah, it's weird for us because our lives and our careers as they are now rely on us getting stuff done.
Yeah.
But they also rely on that stuff looking as good as it can.
Right.
So we're always in this catch-22 situation for work, which is, you know, we didn't have that before. Now we do. Right. So that's interesting.
Yeah.
And you always kind of feel that, you know, this could be better, that could be better. But yeah, I usually rely on testers and feedback. I've said to you, like, I consider my real reviews are when the first screenshots are shown off.
Right.
And I read the response to that. If people are like, this looks great, I want to play it, I'm like, I've done my job, you know? And then there's just playing the game and making sure the animations look good, you know, that sort of stuff. So, yeah, it's interesting that I already feel like I know how the graphics of Unavowed have been received.
Mm-hmm.
Because people have seen it.
Sure.
You know? And
meanwhile, you still have, like, you know,
over a year left on the project, right, probably, you know. So, yeah, it's interesting. Mm. It's a hard question to answer in a definitive way, because when you're learning, always learning,
yeah,
it's going to change.
You are always talking about how you're always striving to push yourself.
Yes.
And like you said, you have another year left on this project, and you also said that you haven't really found your footing yet, that being comfortable at this resolution. So what happens if 6 months down the line you become more confident and you start looking at the early stuff and you think,
oh, that's already happened.
Okay.
Oh, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I've been working on this project for like a few months now.
And what have you done about it?
Being sad.
You haven't gone back and fixed stuff?
Well, I recently redid the female character.
Well, I mean, but I'm talking about backgrounds.
Well, in terms of backgrounds, nothing.
Okay.
Because I'm stronger at backgrounds than characters.
Right.
At this point, I think we both agree that.
Mm-hmm.
But the characters, you know, I've redone a bunch of sprites, like standing sprites, because people commented and I myself thought, oh, that's not quite right.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I have reworked things.
Okay.
Yeah. And we'll continue to rework things probably.
Mm.
As it is, economical to do so, but I also always rework stuff after I've finished all my to-do lists.
Yeah.
You know, so
that makes sense, I think.
So I try and keep it so that I'm not holding anybody up while redoing things. That's my dessert. When I finish the main course, you know.
Yeah.
And I've got still a bit of space left to eat something. I'm like, okay, now I'll do the.
Well, you've always got space to eat something.
That's true.
Yeah, good.
Good. I'm glad we had this talk.
I'm also glad we had this talk. Do we have anything else to say on the subject?
You're always going to be learning stuff.
Yeah.
You're always going to feel like, oh, I could do this so much better. It's true. Yeah.
It is.
It is.
I was just telling you the other day on the subway, I randomly said, I think Charlike would have benefited if we had had this. And you said, maybe, but it's hard to say because whatever.
Because we didn't put it in and test it.
Exactly.
You know,
ideas are always good.
And like, there's a million things I would change about Shardlight. That's true of every game.
Sure.
So, you know.
The Gazette.
The Gazette. It's justified.
I see.
But yeah, look. Good. Justified. You're always gonna have this, I could do this better.
Yes.
You can do it better.
Yeah. The trick is figuring out how to do it better. Should you, and also just get a standard from the get-go and consistency. That's our mantra.
None of that stuff is actually achievable, so you're doomed to fail. Sorry.
Right. Well, that's a nice note to end on.
I'm sorry for being a realist.
That's all right.
Smiling's overrated.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Anyway, yeah, I guess that's it for now.
I've got nothing else to say.
I got nothing else to say either.
No.
Yeah, but we've been talking a good while, so we'll end it here. If you have any suggestions for topics, you can feel free to let us know.
Please.
Please do.
How can we contact you, Francisco?
Well, you can contact us as an entity at, you can always send a PM on the AGS forums as both Paunch did. Anis posted in the Blue Cup Tools podcast thread.
He did post in the Blue Cup Tools podcast thread.
Which is a way to do it.
I agree.
You can also contact us individually on Twitter. I am at Grindislav Games.
I am at Ben_304. And together we are at BCT_podcast.
Good.
That's easier in person.
It's way easier. Much easier. In person. Mm. Yeah. Right. So, okay. That's our podcast.
Gosh.
Next time.
Man, we covered some ground.
We covered some ground. Yeah. Next time you will be back in Australia?
Yes.
And
I agree.
I will still be here in New York.
And we will.
Why? I like it here.
Oh. Well, congratulations.
On what? I don't know, but okay.
I'm liking something. That's new for you.
Like my feet in the face. Goodbye.